This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
All right, well, welcome to a very special holiday edition of the Reardon Roundtable, ladies and gentlemen. Woo! On a beautiful Friday. Jane Duker is here in the house. How are you?
I showered, so that's good.
Yeah, you got like a different hair
I got wet hair.
Oh, like, is that what it
I
is?
I got wet hair, yeah. I mean, well, I was got, you know, doing housework, and I'm like, oh, I can't, okay. I can't offend these people.
Well, I thank you for the personal attention to hygiene before you came into the studio. I can't say it's the same for everyone, but we'll find out, certainly.
We'll
Steve Butts
out.
Looks phenomenal this afternoon.
As
How
usual.
Are you, Steve? State thanks. Representative.
Thanks, Mark. Woo-hoo! Happy Labor Day to one and all, and I am doing great. Thank you for having me.
David Barklage is in the house, GOP consultant. How are you?
I'm doing good, and in fact, I think even Republicans can agree that Steve Butts looks good.
Yeah,
I think
we'd have some unanimity on this. Hi, Sue, how are you?
I am fine, thank you.
You were talking with Steve. Look, I felt so disappointed, but I had to pull out at the last minute of the John Batiste and Diana Ross show, which I desperately wanted to go to. You were there, and Steve, you were there last night as well, right at the Muni?
Oh yeah, Angie and I were. It was a beautiful night, was it?
It was gorgeous. I've not seen that many people in Forest Park at the Muni in a long time. That show was packed.
That's good to hear.
That is good.
But isn't John Batiste amazing?
Oh, he puts on a show. I've seen him on television video, but live, unbelievable.
That's great. That was the first time that they had done something like that, where they were kind of like co-headliners. Now, I don't know. You haven't told me much what Diana did. Steve, you said she was showing her age, which is she's 80 years old, right?
Yeah, I mean, 81. Hey, you know what? It was beautiful to be in the presence of a legend and an icon.
And she sounded better than a lot of those age. Plus, they brought up the Chuck Berry family.
Nice.
It was fantastic.
Well, that's cool.
And they performed Johnny Be Good. It was so great.
Awesome. I'd love to
it
hear
was
that.
Great.
Well, that's cool. And, you know, I wish, I've said this for years, and I'm disappointed that they don't have more concerts at this time of year. Now, they had one last year, but the Muni used to have concerts.
Oh, I think they should love concerts at the Muni.
Like into September, maybe. I mean, they got lucky. You guys got lucky because the weather could have been a lot hotter, right?
You're right about that.
Okay, Steve, I'll start with you here. There is an indication that Governor Kehoe is going to call a special session, call you types back into Jeff City to address a couple of different issues, including redrawing the congressional lines. That has not happened yet, though. That's my understanding. It's expected that it's going to happen this afternoon, maybe even before we're off the roundtable here.
I'm checking my phone right now, and it has not happened. The rumor is at 4:00 we're going to know if we all have to be back in Jeff City on Tuesday and or Wednesday.
Okay. David, explain what's going on here. What is the governor going to do? There's some pressure from the White House on the redistricting. There is the initiative petition issue that seemingly is going to be on the table as well. Explain what's going on.
Number one, redistricting is a very partisan process, and what's happening in Missouri, it's just one step up. A few other states have done it, but basically Trump, in protecting his congressional majority, is going to a few key Republican states that can gain a seat that maybe didn't take advantage of that. Maybe they weren't quite as partisan at the first time around. The second part is IP reform. And that is what we're seeing. For over 100 years, Missouri has had the IP process that has allowed citizens to petition their government and to get a constitutional change or something. They took on the Pendergast machine.
This is initiative petition, just so people are clear. Yeah. It's when you're in the parking lot at a grocery store and they try to get you to sign for a petition. If you get enough signatures, you get on the ballot.
Goes on the ballot.
Right.
So what's happened is Democrat groups or progressive groups have targeted Missouri for policies. They've raised the money. They've come in. They've used the IP process to get Medicaid expansion and some things like that. Marijuana was 43 pages, I think.
39, but I got your message.
But anyway, Republicans' legislatures, to me, it is two competing sides both going the wrong direction. Republicans' legislature, they want to have absolute control of any laws in the state, and out-of-state progressive groups want to come in and to, you know, basically use the IP process to re-legislate Missouri. And the problem is the reforms, where they're going, they're going to either end up trying to destroy the IP process, or they're going to go to bar the legislature from really interacting in it at all. And to that regard, neither direction is good. And so I would argue the IP is probably more onerous than the redistricting. And look, in Missouri redistricting, I was in 1980 as my first campaign. Bill Emerson, he got elected. Wendell Bailey got elected. There was not, you had Kit Bond, governor, Democrats in the Senate and House. They couldn't come up with an agreement. It went to a Democrat judge who ended up putting Bailey and Emerson together. So this has been a history everywhere.
I did not have a Wendell Bailey reference on my bingo card here on the roundtable today.
There you go.
That was one of the first politicians that I ever interviewed, like when I was a student at Mizzou in J school, was Wendell Bailey. Steve, how do you see this? You see it differently than David?
I see part of what David was just saying. Here's a couple things that I think were left out of that. And first off, the last, say, 10 years when we've had some IP reform, this didn't pass because liberal Democrats came into the state of Missouri. That's not true. These passed because the majority of Missouri voters went to the poll and voted for these things, like Medicaid expansion, which many Republican states had done as well, and legalizing marijuana, just to throw out two that have happened very recently. That was part of it on the redistricting thing. It's not that we're going to have a fight on redistricting. That happens every 10 years. It's that we're doing it in the middle of the decade. We just did it 3.5 years ago or so. Everybody gerrymanders, both parties, no question about it. The difference here is, and I think people on both sides, everybody should say, we're moving the goalposts in the middle of the game.
See, I'll be honest with you. I don't like that part, but I also know that the reality of it is this is politics is a blood sport. It's a dirty game.
It is,
and you know what's happening in Texas, California, what's happened in Illinois. So you can, I guess, and Barklage, I guess you might agree with this, but you can sit back and you can do nothing on that issue, or you can move forward and try to pick up a Republican seat. Yep. Now it looks like if that would happen, it would not really affect the Wesley Bell seat here, the former Cory Bush seat, but it would change.
Emanuel Cleaver and Kansas City.
Right, and that could potentially then be crafted into a winning district for Republicans, which would be the goal.
Just split it up.
But potentially there's a chance that, of course, we would still hold a seat or two because they're going to dilute Republican seats. And this is in suburban Kansas City, and it's kind of a purple area.
The good side of it is that to divide these seats up, you lower the partisan factor in each of the seats, meaning that they're more competitive. One thing I'll point out is that I think this latest redistricting fight is a reflection of the greatest generation that respected institutions and traditions to the new generation who doesn't trust institutions and doesn't respect traditions. And what we've seen in presidential powers, we've seen it almost everywhere in government and politics, is that we're throwing out traditions, we're throwing out things that kept partisan fighting down when they could, and instead we're kicking it up. And every party, I agree with Steve, both parties, everybody's responsible.
Jane, your take on all that?
Well, I mean, he really must be worried about the Epstein files, because I can't think of any reason why you have to do this unless you're afraid.
Oh, come on. You're not going to go to the Epstein files thing.
I'm going to it, baby.
That's the distraction.
I'm going to it. I'm sorry. I mean, I agree with IP reform, by the way. I don't know if I agree with it on statutes. But certainly constitutional amendments.
But what form? Okay, but stop there, because there's different options when it comes to, this is like my least favorite topic. I've talked about it for years.
It's
and I
really
think it makes
though.
Eyes glaze over. But it is important, and I understand that. But you can do the initiative petition reform in a variety of ways. And they had those up for debate even up to 2 years ago in the session.
And it was Republicans that killed it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I find it a little
ironic.
So
what do you make the threshold? Because right now it's 50%, right? It's just one vote over 50%.
I think for constitutional amendments, it should be higher than 50%. Yeah. With regard to statutory, I think it should stay at 50 plus one vote. And I think the Constitution needs to be harder to amend. You know, 39-page, you know, amendments to our Constitution. So, I am not a
look,
fan
yeah,
of
that. And, I, look, I
and
voted
I'm more
for
of a
the,
traditionalist.
I voted
I
for the marijuana reform and for a variety of reasons, including my wife works in the industry, but I did not like the way that it was crafted,
look,
right?
When you have like 100 words in fair language to describe 43 pages, you're not going to do it. And and the real changes they need to do on Medicaid, not debating Medicaid, but there was a loophole because it was a program. Typically, you have to fund any program you put on the ballot. And so a small loophole would have fixed that. I mean, maybe it would have passed or whatever, but little changes like that, it's the same thing, limiting the scope of a constitutional amendment so that you're not getting down into operations and into things like that. But you could limit the scope of the Constitution so you wouldn't have had the marijuana industry passing a 39-page constitutional amendment that was all written for them, by them.
Right.
And the same thing, Clean Missouri was a great example, as Republicans have done as well, is they put something in the ballot that's not on the language.
Ballot candy.
And to that regard, again, you could do a preemptive challenge on those things if there is misleading language or controversial language within an amendment that is not disclosed in the fair ballot, you could strike it.
Right.
So there's easy, so, good ways, but they're not talking about
it. But if the governor's going to do this, and it looks like he is this afternoon, he's going to call, is this still called a special session, or is it called an extraordinary session? Sometimes the language gets, you know,
I call it a special
session. So, but in theory,
on who calls it.
If he's calling this into, you know, you're calling you guys back into Jeff City, there's going to be a fair amount of confidence he's going to get things done on both of those topics, right?
Yep. He certainly has to try. I mean, it's obvious that he has a ton of pressure to do this. And, I mean, the president's already come out and said he's going to. So, you know, that sort of puts Kehoe, you know, in a corner. And I think that, you know, whether it passes is going to be up to Republicans. It's not Democrats. This is going to be, Republicans all do it? And will they do it in the same way? I guess we'll find out.
If the governor could get stadiums passed and sort of brought the legislature together during regular session, I figure he has a plan and he'll get it done.
I mean, you know, it certainly wouldn't bother me if he couldn't get it done.
There's going to be no Democrat support on any of this?
No, so, you know, and when you are in a super minority position, both in the Senate and the House, as we are, unlike Texas, it's not like we can just go to California and visit grandkids and, you know, and not let a quorum happen. So we have to be there.
Yep.
We're going to be there. And I think our best strategy is rally Missouri citizens to say, look, this is outrageous. And actually, at the end of the day, if Texas flips 5 and California is able to flip 5,
it's gonna be a wash,
we flip
anywhere.
1
yes.
and Vermont flips 1,
you're just
at the
cause
end of the day,
reaction.
This country is right at 50-50. This election for the House is going to be razor thin. I think most people say every 10 years is enough. We don't need to do it for Trump.
Well, and why isn't anybody arguing about why are we wasting tax? Why do we have to have a special session? Well, in this case, an extraordinary session. Every time Republicans can't get their job done. I mean, you know, I mean, when I was in the governor's office, David, you remember this because you worked for Senator Kinder when I was chief of staff. I mean, when we called a special session, you would have thought the Republicans had a heart attack that we would have the nerve in a budget crisis to be spending that kind of money to drag people in here for a political purpose. When do we get to say the taxpayer dollars really aren't worth this?
One, it is being overlaid over veto session to help cut some of the cost. One, two, this came up after session. There are issues that come up occasionally.
I mean, the president
after session
brought it up.
But I will give Jane a history lesson. I remember being at the governor's mansion, being there at the behest of Senators Kinney and Kinder, and Governor Holden had called the special session, and our concern was only that it didn't fail, that it was succeeded, and if he had a plan. And that was what concerned us. So actually, we didn't go too
crying. Which special? Well, I mean, I remember we called a special
session
for prescription drugs.
Maybe the Speaker of the House did.
The now Attorney General. But yeah, no, I mean, we called special session for things like, you know, prescription drugs for seniors. And, you know, because the budget cut kids off of health care. You know, I mean, I think this is a lot of taxpayer dollars for a lot of nonsense. Because for veto session, they'd go up for 5 minutes and they would leave. This is going to be numerous days. We're paying people to come, the whole nine yards.
Jane, for all listeners, why did you call that special session? What did you accomplish back then?
I think, the prescription drugs for seniors?
Yeah, I just wanted to get that point out.
No, the donut hole. Yeah,
you know,
we fixed that. We did that.
I'm trying not to be partisan here, guys, but you're starting to...
I know.
Starting to push it.
Hang tight. We're coming back. David Barklage, State Rep Steve Butts, Jane Duker, all on the panel. It's a Reardon Roundtable on a Friday afternoon. Oh, it's a very special Labor Day edition of the Mark Reardon Show. It's only special because it's on a holiday weekend. By the way, Sue, nice work here because we had... tasked Jane, actually, I reminded you to task Jane with getting some Oreo cookies mixed with Reese's, and I believe she came through for us for a little taste test after the top of the hour, right?
Nobody is more efficient at cookie gathering.
And yes, that was on short notice.
Any kind of candy, cookie, any obscure item, I am your girl.
Nice. Last week I had her send me some Applejack Pop-Tarts. Those are still...
they're the best Pop-Tarts.
They're the best. They really
are. I had
to
buy some after I...
Yes. Steve Butts is here with Jane, State Representative. Also, David Barklage, GOP political strategist. Just quickly, a little bit before we get to some national stuff here on the state front. There's some new laws that have been signed by the governor and then kick in this week. Is that accurate?
Correct, Mark. August 28th, for whatever reason, August 28th, that's the magic day that new laws go into effect unless we did something special. A couple I'll start with the one I think was absolutely the worst. That was the override by the Republicans on the earned paid sick leave bill that was part of
God, you guys don't stop.
Earned, yeah, earned paid sick leave that also included the increase in the minimum wage, $15 an hour, which I think everybody bipartisan support on that part. It did, by repealing that law, it eliminated the indexing on that, which is one of my big, big deals. So I'll just throw that out there. We see a lot of news about cell phone ban in schools. I think that's good for kids, parents, teachers, and everybody else. Tax cuts, Mark, you're always big on that. So we have eliminated taxes on capital gains, I believe, we in Missouri now. So still got to pay them at the federal level. We're one of the few states, if the only state. My beef, and I always talk about it from a business person's point of view, right? We continue to cut taxes automatically and by legislation, and we never explain how we're going to backfill any revenue or what programs we're eliminating. And I think that's disingenuous, right?
Spend less.
Do both.
Spend less.
Well, that's what, can you
it
spend
just
less?
Doesn't happen.
The well, it the should happen. Less. That's the it, thing.
Okay.
Would it be like, would it be completely, I guess it would be, but you know, I've looked at government budgets. Why would it be so hard to go into a session and say, we're just going to keep everything at that last spending level from last year?
I think I could tell you why, Mark. When you've got lots of expenses, let's just say in salaries to people, and you got inflation at
fire people
two, three. We're not at we've got job openings, yeah. So it's not like you can fire people. If you just give
you mean
your
prison guards?
If you give your workforce just a cost of living increase of 2.5%, which isn't enough, but if you just do that, you have to raise revenue. You can't keep it static. Doggone it, it is one thing that it's like a Republican talking point. To me, they're just simpletons on this issue. You have to be able to say honestly to people, we're going to tax you fairly. We're going to make sure every dollar is spent wisely, or at least every $1 million is spent wisely. And if there are programs that don't need to exist, we're going to eliminate them. But after 20 years now, none of that has really happened. So I'm just leaving it there. There's tax cuts in this bill.
I think Republicans have two reasons to cut taxes. One, because they think it's in the economic good.
Stay on that mic for me, David.
One, because sure it's in the economic good of the state or the country to do so. And then second, to control spending, because they have found that literally cutting the taxes is about the only way they've been able to control spending. And I would just argue that it is synonymous with government spending, overspending, and waste. And to that regard, it's a Republican strategy. It is simple. It's very blunt force, but it's like we're going to deny revenues so that it forces cuts in spending because they don't know how to get it done otherwise.
And here's the thing. I mean, and we hear this all the time. I mean, 90% of state government is salaries. I mean, I don't know if that's the exact percentage, but it's pretty close. And it's been under Republican rule.
Well, 90% outside of the Medicaid spending, right? Well,
if you're talking about just, so you have federal funds.
Yeah, federal
that
funds
really
is Medicaid.
Not, we have very little like discretionary spending in the budget because general revenue is really all the legislature has unfettered access to. And it's like it's maybe less than 10%, 7% of the budget. I mean, it's a small amount. That's why, you know, these tax cuts are a bit of an axe when, you know, sometimes you need a scalpel. So I do think that that's an issue. But under Republican reign, it's been, let's see, David, when you and I worked together, the budget was $24 billion. What's the budget now?
I can't remember.
$51
billion. Yeah. It's doubled in 20 years.
Thus, you've just made the case why we need to cut taxes so we can slow spending down.
No, sir. If you just do a simple math of adding a couple percent per year, in 20 years, you're going to double your baseline number. That's just too easy to answer.
But it's funny, though, because it wasn't under Democratic rule. This budget hasn't risen because of Democrats. And so, I think that elected leaders should have courage. Republicans and Democrats should have courage to go in and say, you know what? This is pork. This is baloney. Take it out. The problem is, I've looked at the budget for 20 years. There's not a lot of fat in the Missouri budget. There isn't. I mean, Missouri, I think, is far better than a lot of states. We have a balanced budget amendment.
Well, that's a key part
it's
of that.
It's huge. And so, I mean, you know, while I think it's an issue, it is not as big an issue that justifies an automatic just removal of revenue without any sort of plan.
But Mark, it's Labor Day weekend. I don't want to bury the lead. We passed the American Beer Act, HB 1041,
yes,
which cut the beer tax. Who knew? From $1.86 a barrel to 62 cents a barrel.
Wow.
But mainly, we're no longer going to call, say, Budweiser, for example.
Now, just remember, he criticized the other tax cuts, but when it comes to a South City politician.
There we go.
Anything
that's good for Anheuser-Busch is good for St. Louis.
I want to say one thing that you all can't criticize, and that is that I wasn't on last week that Catherine Hanaway was actually a brilliant pick for Attorney General, and then
literally,
I think she has the qualities, she has the everything you need to have a good Attorney General. That was who on the week would have been Kehoe and Hanaway.
I agree. She is probably the most qualified Attorney General that has taken the office since I've been in
politics. She came in on Monday. We had a great visit. Hang on. We have two more segments of the Reardon Roundtable on a Friday to go. Well, it's a Friday afternoon as we take you into the weekend level of fun in the next hour. Jane, you're going to hang out. We'll do our Oreo cookie taste test. I cannot wait for that. I might need a little milk for that. Hopefully we have some of that.
I don't have milk. You'll
well, I think we have some back in the little cafeteria area. I'll do some checking here at the top of the hour. Steve Butts is here, state representative. He's also running for the Missouri Senate. Should mention that. David Barklage, GOP political strategist. So there's a little bit of new news here this afternoon on the shooter from Minnesota. I do not like to name names. I heard the police chief yesterday say, hey, let's not use these names, but more than 7 years before she opened fire, and yes, it was, I'm sorry, let me correct myself, he opened fire on a Catholic school to mass, killing two children and injuring 17 more worshipers. Police were called to the townhouse in Twin Cities in the suburb where he lived with her mother, and there's a heavily redacted police report that NBC News obtained that shows that it's dated January 26th of 2018, and it shows a two-word description explaining why an officer was dispatched to the address. It says mental health, and everything else is kind of redacted. It does include a synopsis that does say something along the lines of assisted Mendota Heights with a check of a welfare of a juvenile. And, you know, there seemed to be something that was an issue at that house in the past. And there's also, I guess, some information that he had broken up recently with a romantic partner, according to a search warrant obtained by Fox 9 in Minneapolis. The father told police the shooter recently broke up with a significant and or romantic partner. So we don't know a whole lot more. We do know that the mom has lawyered up. I can't even imagine being a family member of someone like this. Now, look, there are questions about whether or not they should have intervened more. Maybe we're going to find some of this out. This was a 23-year-old kid, right, who did this, or man who did this. It's just devastating. Steve, I'll start with you here again. You know, I start my mornings and it's just sick to my stomach when I hear that it's at a Catholic mass in a Catholic school. By the way, and you know, this is hard, I think, for the victims to appreciate, but this could have been so much worse. You know, they have the doors locked to the church, which is, I guess, standard practice, and I think that might have helped reduce the casualties. But here again, we have someone who is a trans shooter, which I do think is part of the equation, and someone who is deeply, deeply troubled. Deeply troubled.
You know, so this is my space, right? We actually even know a family who this was their parish. They had just moved to Ireland for the dad's work, so the kids were not in that church at that time, because they would have been.
Wow.
You know, murder in any type, when it hits close to home, it's brutal, it's terrible. You do get through it.
Well, you lost your sister, for
I
people
did.
Who don't know that.
And,
yeah,
you know, in almost every time, you think to do an act this heinous, to me, you have to be mentally, mentally ill. To murder someone that you have no beef with, which is my situation, which is these kids' situation, it's hellacious, and it does take a lot of prayer, a lot of time, a lot of healing. That being said, in addition to that, I just know one thing. You know, I'm a sportsman. I've been shooting weapons my whole life. I own multiple weapons. I love to hunt. I love to shoot. Red flag laws that just protect even the mentally ill person, and I don't know anything about this person's mental health, except I know they had to be
Yeah.
crazily mentally ill. But we got to have stronger, and maybe they do in Minnesota. I don't know what the red flag laws. I know you can't even get to first base on a red flag law in Missouri. That's how strong people feel. I've read little clips. How
well,
much?
So one of the issues.
Happened.
Okay, look, this is a real life example, as you know. So as I just suffered through a pretty severe mental health episode throughout this summer, one of the questions that I think people have is because look, let's face it, half the country, if not more, has hopped up on antidepressants and anti-anxiety medications. So does that potentially? That's one of the concerns I think that people have when you start to paint with a broad brush like that. Where is the level of mental illness that requires you to, you know, be flagged in one of these situations to not get a weapon?
It is not that. As you might know, in most red flag laws, I mean, David and Jane probably know better than I, but in most cases, it is an immediate family member that knows there needs to be intervention. This is not the state. This is not your next door neighbor. This is not your
boss. That would be legit.
It is your family member, your spouse, your kid, for your kid, whatever. And then even to go there, that family member goes in front of a judge. And even then, when we take the weapon away, like Abraham Lincoln's friends did when they took his weapon away, when they knew he was in such a dark, dark place, you get it back after some time. So it's not just the government coming in. It is your loved ones coming in.
Did anyone listen to the audio of the video that was out there? They pulled it down from YouTube. I mean, it is just beyond creepy. And then, you know, what he's doing is he's looking at all the weaponry and the cartridges, and he's writing names, and he's paying homage to some of the past, you know,
serial
mass
killers.
Murders and stuff like that. And then there's anti-everything, anti-Jewish, anti-Semitic. There's, you know, anti-Trump. It's just bizarre. And I guess we'll never really understand why someone, because he indicated in the writings that he was, you know, really obsessed with hurting children. Now, why that becomes a part of the equation when this person goes into it knowing he's going to be dead too, either shot by police or in this case, he shot himself. But that's the thing with people removing themselves from the planet. I can understand that. I don't understand, you know, going after kids in a church or in a school. But
it's that evil and it's that sick.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing, this guy was so round the bend. I mean, I wonder why he was
beyond. Yeah.
Yeah. Why he hadn't been committed in the, you know, for just some of the things that he said and did. I mean,
it might be why the mom is not going to say a whole lot right now, because there's some, you know, there might be some risk for her for sure.
And there may be. Yeah. And I'm sure she lived in fear. There's no way that you have a child like this and you don't live in fear that they're going to do something to themselves or to others.
But Jane, there's another whole issue, the whole mental health crisis in America.
Oh, it is a crisis.
And it's tough for parents. They don't have many options.
Not resources.
Like, so you want to commit this guy. I mean, unless you're really wealthy, how are you going to get somebody, you know, committed? Because there's really nowhere to get services.
I even go a step further. I think even if you are really wealthy, I've talked to people. The resources are very difficult, right? Especially to turn them around quickly. And I can vouch for that personally from the summer. Yeah. But when it comes to kids, you know, I saw something. I've mentioned this a couple of times over the last 2 years. And I don't know where this took them or what the operating, you know, status is right now. But they went to a situation, 60 Minutes did a piece that was actually halfway decent, even though half their stuff is not, about mental health and kids. And they had like a walk-in clinic in Milwaukee that they were starting to use. Because one of the issues is, let's say you flag a kid, and this crosses into the trans area as well. Jamie Reed wrote about this in her whistleblower report and was really pissed off that there were these doctors that were really supposed to be caring for their patients across the spectrum, but they were, you know, automatically hopping them up on puberty blockers and other things when it was very clear to Jamie, and this bore itself out. These were kids that were terribly mentally ill. I mean, severely mentally ill, and it was almost just looked over and skipped over.
Because we don't have any sort of mental health infrastructure to take care of these issues. I mean, I'm sure this kid was struggling for years. What if he had
gotten... sounds like that now. I think you know that for sure.
What if he got early intervention, you know, years ago? Maybe this kind of stuff can be avoided. But we can keep ignoring mental health, but I don't think it bodes well for us.
Jane Duker, Steve Butts, State Representative David Barklage, GOP strategist. David, I'll start with you on the D.C. crime issue is fascinating. Even the mayor of D.C., Muriel Bowser, had to come out a couple of nights ago and say, you know, I'm not crazy about all this, but carjackings are down like 97% from the year before, and some of this is working. Now, I don't know where this takes us in Chicago. There's different circumstances with Washington, D.C. being the nation's capital, but it's again, isn't it a misreading of the issue by Democrats not understanding that crime is important to a lot of people, no matter who they might have voted for in the last election, because they don't feel safe in many situations?
Until the media and until the Democrats come to sort of grips with Trump, you're not going to get fair analysis on these things. And to that regard, anybody that's been in D.C. knows how bad crime is, and even the best places. And to the extent what he did, being someone who's there, who has a lot of people he's brought to D.C., it made sense. It was reasonable. But everybody had to respond because it was Donald Trump and it sounded dramatic. Chicago is another example of I think, a city that is in need of an intervention. And they're in denial. And the governor's in denial. And I hope, you know, this is where Trump actually, I think, is better than some presidents, is that he's willing to go against the trend, against what other people want. And to take that fight and not be afraid of it. So hopefully it will end up in Chicago well, because, you know, Chicago is a dangerous place.
And here's the thing. What we're starting to find out is that they, you know, these big cities have been juking the stats. I mean, that's part of this issue.
It is part of the issue.
Is that they're figuring out if they report them. Yeah, we have trouble doing that in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so that Band-Aid, I mean, like even, you know, I mean, even every discussion in St. Louis about crime is like, oh, well, crime is really down. And I'm like, is it, though?
Every time I see a story. This is an important point, because if you look at the New York Times, Washington Post, the legacy media, even reporting on what's happening in D.C., they all have to say this little, crime is reported down in all these cities.
Reported by whom?
Exactly.
And they already readjusted the numbers. They had to go in and readjust the crime numbers nationally because it wasn't accurate. And so I think we're going to uncover a lot of that. I know we're going to have more FBI agents
We talked about that last week. That's a good thing.
Which is a good thing. And I'm happy about that. And when the feds and the state and the locals work together, it's a good thing.
But Steve, why can't Democrats say, you know what, this is a pretty important issue, crime.
Let's get it under control. Maybe we should work
together, and maybe some of this stuff will work.
Well, lots of Democrats, like two of us right here, do that all the time.
Yes.
And I will say that, sure, if we put this out as an initiative petition, let everybody vote. To me, this is one of those 80-20, 75-25 issues. There is a difference with sending in the Guard or the armed forces in Washington, D.C., compared to the president doing it in Chicago, where there's not rioting, which was the excuse in Los Angeles, and Washington, D.C., where he's got a lot of authority over. I mean, it's the seat of the federal government.
Right.
It's different in Chicago. So, yeah, so these numbers I crunch, I think anybody, right? Statistics can be twisted any way you like. I think people need to look at just a 5-year rolling average of crime. And you will see, if you take out that 2020-2021 weirdo spike, crime is still quite high. You need to compare it to 2018, 2017, et cetera. And I think if we would just get a handle on the shooters, look up, if you're listening right now, just say, how many murders are in the city of Chicago? It is unfathomable.
I'll only say one thing. When a city fails to protect, just like St. Louis, mm-hmm. we have a police department that was taken over. And Jane would argue I was on the opposite side. But my point is that it probably needed a takeover because it wasn't being dealt with. And I would argue the same thing Chicago. If the governor and the city won't do it, someone has to step in to protect the citizens.
Do you know, the last time we had a riot,
even though it's not preferred,
the last time we had a riot,
here?
Yes. And, you know, Stockley.
Stockley is what, right.
And, you know, there were four cops shot in one night. The president of the Police Officer Association was pinned against a dumpster for 45 minutes with gunfire, and a jurisdiction of unknown origin actually saved them. At that point, Governor Parson offered the Missouri National Guard, and the city said no. So that can, you know, so I can see where people are like, oh, we're going to wait for the locals to do it. No, the locals don't want to admit that they had a fundamental problem. But thank God that the Missouri National Guard was in the basement of the federal courts, because somebody had the bright idea that it was
Jane,
new.
Police use the swarm strategy all the time, and this is really just a variation of it.
Absolutely. It's all hotspot. It's all the same thing. The bottom line is we do not have enough police officers to properly police this city. That is the problem.
There's the bell. Well,
and
that's D.C.'s problem, too, and it's Chicago's problem,
it is.
Too.
And so, you know what? I welcome the help. I'm glad the FBI is coming. I hope maybe we get more. Maybe we don't need the National Guard, but we certainly need an audit of the crime stat.
All right, hang tight. We have one more segment of the Reardon Roundtable on a Friday still to come. I always feel like we get to this point, we have to do a little bit of a speed round on the roundtable because we run out of time. Jane Duker is here. She's going to hang in the next hour. State Rep. Steve Butts and David Barklage, GOP political strategist. One thing, I meant to mention this last week, but is there a situation, Steve Ellman said at one point he was not going to run for St. Charles County Executive for re-election next year, but David Barklage, is he changing his mind on that because he's concerned about the field? Is that what we're hearing?
You know, I think there's a lot of reasons that there was a poll done that showed that Mike Elam was being beat 2-1 by Igel, Jason Law 3-1 by Igel, and Ellman was beating Igel 2-1. Ellman has a favorability of 67-13. And when you did a poll test of Steve's positives and some of Igel's record, Steve was winning by over 50%. So I think, one, assessing the race that maybe the other candidates in could not beat Bill Igel, and that for whatever reason that Steve feels that his legacy is best protected by him running. You know, I think it's very likely that he runs. I think he's doing due diligence, and I think he wanted to see other people run, but I don't think the poll supports their victory.
But if he runs, then Mike Elam would likely not run. He would probably pull out of the race, right?
Right. Mike and him, I think, are fairly close.
Yes.
I don't know. Jason Law may too, but I can't speak for him.
But this is all in an effort to stop Igel, right? I mean, that's what it's about, isn't it?
You know, look, I think Steve has invested a long time. I don't know if it would be Bill Igel. I think Bill Igel is understands the difference between the role of a county exec and a senator. Senators speak, county execs have to work. And I think Bill Igel gets that. But I think it's probably more about the fact that Steve was always looking for, you know, when will be my last term? When is it a good time to get out? And I think he just felt that some continuity and other issues, more than anti-Igel, I think it's more about what he wants to accomplish. And he has been working really well with the other regional leaders. We're starting to see the regional leaders coming together, like on this law enforcement academy and other things.
Yep.
And so I think that's exciting him to actually be able to partner with. And I think if Brian Williams gets in and wins the county exec race, you're going to have a guy who is very collaborative with those other areas.
I think we have a real opportunity. And I will say, I mean, I love Steve Ellman. And, I mean, I've known him and I've worked with him for 25, 30 years.
And he loves you.
I do love him. And I think he's a great leader. And what I would say is if the people want him, then the people want him. And, you know, I'm all for, you know, if the people want somebody because they like the direction that St. Charles is going, they're increasing their minority population. They're increasing their population. Their tax base is great. I mean, I think it would behoove. I think if we get rid of scam, I think we have a huge opportunity.
By the way, on that front, on Sam, that would be Sam Page. She's referring to Scam Page.
Yeah, Scam.
Did I hear he avoided the perp walk on his indictment?
Yeah, he avoided the perp walk by he avoided the perp walk today by just, you know, conceding. He didn't go to his arraignment because he just said, yes, I understand the charges that are being leveled against me and I plead not guilty, because he didn't want the people to see him walking in to, you know, go talk about his felony indictment. And so, you know, it's just all politics with him. So if you're innocent, then go to court. But he didn't want to.
Madam Attorney, you don't have to go to your own arraignment?
Not if, you know, everybody agrees that it's okay.
Okay.
Which is sad.
Steve Butts, the Cardinals had the smallest crowd since 1997 earlier this week.
Can you blame them? Now, it was a Monday night game,
right,
against the Pirates. So, come on, let's you know.
I get that. But look, now we got, I think Burleson went on the injured list today, and somebody else, I think Pozo did as well. It's going to be, you know, let's face it, they're not going to finish above 500. Adam Wainwright's prediction is probably not going to come true. You got to move forward toward the next few years. But man, there is such a rebuild and so much work to do. We're sitting here really kind of in the same spot we were a year ago, wondering some of these questions. But it's sad to see the stadium the way that it has been filled up.
It is. And, you know, a team like the Cardinals in a mid sized city the way we are. We outperform, and we're used to that. And I was just at a game out in Los Angeles about a month ago, and you know, it's awesome to see 40,000 people and a lot of things on the line. The Cardinals were playing there, so that part was cool. Yes, the well-being and psychology of St. Louis is intimately tied with the Cardinals. I'm glad to see the Mozeliak era is over. It probably should have ended a year ago. Pitching, but it was the Pirates on a Monday night, September 3rd.
I know, but it's been pretty consistent, though.
It has. I mean, you know, we're going to be bottom half, and we're usually in the top three or four, so we outpunch our weight class almost all the time, but not this year, and it's sad, and you see it downtown. It's a ripple effect.
But it's not going to be next year either. I mean, this is going to take a while.
And, I agree.
And we knew that last year, but
at least if we have exciting young players that are, you know, ready to for the big show, at least there'll be something to come and watch. People
baseball. They were a good, you know, they were an entertaining team for most of the year.
Correct, right, so, up until now.
And I think that certainly was.
But now we can't pitch.
By the way, I went to the game Monday, and the food was good.
There you go.
The food is great.
Ringing endorsement. We really don't have time to cover this, but I was thrilled, even though they were essentially playing a high school team last night, to see Mizzou come out of the gate so strong. Not too crazy that Sam Horn, he could have been the first-string quarterback. There was a quarterback competition. Right. He gets hurt on the first play. But, man, Bo Prabula looked really good. Again, Central Arkansas is not exactly a Big 12 team like KU or an SEC team. We're going to see the difference in athleticism. But it was a good way. They did, Steve, what they needed to do, crush a team like that.
We did.
Last
we had
night.
To make a statement. You know, that's a practice game for Mizzou. Next week, Kansas is the test.
It's going to be good.
Going to be
that's
a good,
be
good
a lot
game.
Of fun
Let's
for
go,
sure.
Mizzou.
David Barklage, great to see you. Thank you for coming in, spreading your knowledge as you always do. Or your BS, one of those two things. I don't know. Steve Butts, great to see you. Thanks for coming in. Have a great weekend. Jane, you're going
to
hang out. We're doing our taste test in the next hour of new Oreo cookies.